Hello, welcome to episode 58 of the Extra Sequential podcast focusing on graphic novels, manga, and comic books. My name's Mladen, and I don't have Chris with me here this week, unfortunately due to a terrible case of the runs, or as Chris might have delicately put it, food poisoning. He will not be joining us for the Star Wars special. But it's not just me, folks. We do have a special guest here with us, Luke Milton of the C-List podcast. How you going, Luke?
Hello. Wow, you just totally threw Chris under the bus, didn't you?
He threw me under the bus by making me host this on my own.
Not on your own anymore. I'm here for you.
That is true.
I'm gonna be your Chewbacca in this Millennium Falcon of podcasts.
You'll just groan a lot.
Yeah, your wingman.
I should mention, and like people have just heard us chat yammering on about nothing in particular. They're going, yeah. Who is this guy? Who is Luke Milton?
Who's this guy?
Who's this dude?
Co-pilot.
I'm pretty sure I first met you several years ago at 24 Hour Comics, and
this is true.
Yes, I remembered being struck by your hilarious Bunnies That Hate comic.
Mm.
Are you still doing those?
I do one once a year at the 24 Hour Comics thing. It's the only way I can really be motivated to do a whole comic. Is to be put in a room for 24 hours, close the doors, and I'll just do it. And even then, I'm only motivated because of all the other people sitting there doing it as well.
I was going to say, watching over your shoulder, checking what you're up to. I felt the same thing. That's the only time I've ever done like full comic pages was when people were looking over my shoulder and going, oh, you've only done a couple of sketches at this point. And I was like, oh, better pull my socks up and do some piece of crap.
I start strong. Like, I get really into it and I'm really amped, but then I start to flag. But then you look at other people and you're just seeing all these amazing things they're doing. I mean, you know, there was a guy doing a pop-up comic book.
Oh, man. I forgot about that one.
Yeah. So, I mean, people doing all these amazing things, working with inks, doing all amazing stuff, and you just think, wow, I need to do this or I'm going to look really lame.
I should mention that 24 Hour Comics is on October the 1st this year. You can contact the organizers, just look up 24 Hour Comics. I'll put a link on the website. If you want to take part and you're in Perth, I think it's at the Fremantle Film and Television Institute again this year. So that's a good one. And other than that, you're the host of the C-List podcast, where you kind of look at the kind of useless or forgotten characters in familiar films. So in a recent show, you looked at Drew Barrymore in Scream, who gets killed off in the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
12 minutes. Oh. I know that with authority now. And she's quite a major character for us. Normally, you know, really minor people. Like the Tinker from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the original one. He's the guy. You know, Charlie's looking through the bars and because he's really hungry.
He's
looking at the chocolate factory and he's thinking, I want some of that chocolate. And then this old guy wheels up with a cart full of meat cleavers and he says this really creepy rhyme to Charlie. And then Charlie runs away, and the guy walks away backwards, which is a totally creepy thing to do.
Ooh.
Made even creepier if you have a cart full of knives.
Was Slughorn watching from the shadows? Was that his name? He had like a...
Yeah, Slughorn was the like rival guy.
Yeah. Oh, I always forget that film has like almost an hour before they get to like the chocolate factory. At least it feels that way. A long
sort
stretch of,
like
of depressing.
This episode where it's almost an hour before we get to Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, Star Wars.
This is total C-list style. This is what we do.
To get us in the Star Wars mood, here is a famous line from the Star Wars saga. Maybe not the clip I meant to play there, but that'll do.
It's a famous line now.
Yes.
And will be very, very famous in the next week, I imagine.
Is infamous the word you're looking for there?
That could be. Could be. I understand it.
They've changed that sound effect so many times now, I think I would have been upset if they didn't.
Well, okay, I mean? It's Obi-Wan making the noise of a crate dragon in order to scare the Tusken Raiders, right?
Yeah.
But there's no way that anyone in the audience... is going to know. Like, my grandmother's seen Star Wars, I'm sure. She doesn't know he's making the noise of a crate dragon. You only know that if you've read other stuff, comics, books, whatever.
Yeah. But this sounds like he's stubbed his toe in a bathroom.
Otherwise, you hear this noise.
Yeah.
You don't know where that noise came from. It doesn't sound like Obi-Wan made it. Now, at least, it's kind of a human noise.
I see what you mean. I see what you're getting at. Yeah, there's some reasoning behind that. And I won't say all the alterations to the Blu-ray are negative. We can get into those... in a second. It just occurred to me that crate dragon must have been when George was really stretching for names to call this the science fiction-y things. He's like, ugh.
He was sitting on some old crates.
The box dragon, the pen pen trooper.
There is a great, I got the book today, and you can look at little featurettes about certain characters and things, and they give you a bit of origin. They give you a 3D turnaround of the puppet or the model or whatever it is, and they tell you a bit about its genesis. And, I mean, you joke about that with the crate dragon, but you know Salacious Crumb?
Yes.
Who's the little sits on Jabba's tail, Jabba's pet.
Yeah.
Guy's saying that basically George said, you know, I like this puppet. He was only going to be a background one. He said, well, make it Jabba's pet, but I need a name. Go away, come back with a name. And these guys got drunk.
Comic related, possibly?
No.
I'm just thinking of the last name because of Crumb.
Oh, yeah, no. He didn't actually, he was only talking about the first name in this story. This guy's shoelaces were undone, and he said while drunk, I got to tie up my shoelaces. And they said, Shlaces, that's a great name. And they went to George and said, his name's Shlaces. And George said, no, his name's not Shlaces, but I will call him Salacious. I don't know where the Crumb came from. Probably from Robert Crumb. Let's just say yes, because that's a tie-in. George was watching a Fritz the Cat marathon.
Oh, my.
Through a Stargate, because I think that was released a lot later.
Yeah. What? Stargate? What?
Yeah. A portal. Some sort of portal into the future.
You've done a thing. Okay. I was thinking more like Quantum Leap, maybe.
Yeah, it could be.
Yes.
Well, he's always been at the forefront of technology.
Hey, we've been rambling for far too long. On Star Wars, I mean, this is one of those franchises that is no longer even nerdy cred. I think anyone can say, oh, yeah, I like Star Wars. It's no longer considered an embarrassing thing. And I think even at the time, it was such a huge deal that it's like the one science fiction property that no one's embarrassed to say that they really like, you know? Do you know where I'm coming from?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I still don't think there's anything that really kind of matches it. And I mean, especially around that time when the originals came out, most science fiction movies you can think of had one type of alien in them, you know? Everything was really clean cut.
Yeah.
It wasn't world building.
Yeah, in terms of film, definitely the science fiction films at the time, and I'm a huge fan of science fiction and science fiction films, especially of the 70s, but they were getting into the kind of the hard sci-fi aspect. So you had films like Silent Running, like serious science fiction films, and I think Star Trek, the motion picture, was in development at the time as well, and that went for a hard sci-fi thing as well. But then Star Wars kind of came and completely changed the face of science fiction film. And I mean, it is kind of a classic callback to Flash Gordon. And the first film especially reminds me a lot of those 1950s British World War II movies where it's like, come on, fellows, let's go beat those Nazi scum at their own game, except they're Imperial scum at their own game. It's kind of this, war's a bit of clean fun, except when your aunt and uncle get charred horribly.
Yeah.
But you're a little bit older than me, I think.
I am.
Chris is...
I'm quite considerably older than you, I think.
How the hell old are you? What are you?
I'm 35.
Oh, my. You're like Chris's generation, old man.
Yeah.
So you would have been like...
Star Wars couldn't have seen it.
Yeah.
I remember Return of the Jedi is the one I remember seeing in the theater, though I had seen... Actually, no, I saw Star Wars in the theater first, I must admit, but it must have been a re-release.
Yeah, they released it again, I think, in 81?
Yeah. That sounds about right. Because I was very young, and I didn't even know who Han Solo was. I knew, who Greedo was and Walrus Man and Hammerhead, and I really loved all those designs. Is it because they were toys? Yeah, pretty much.
Because the toys were a huge deal. As you mentioned, Salacious B. Crumb. The name was important because something had to go on all the merchandise packaging. And
they didn't care too much then, though. I mean, everything was bum face and hairy head and stuff like that. It's only in the 97 re-release of all the toys where they start giving them, the expanded universe names where suddenly everyone's,
got apostrophes all over their name.
And, yeah, or things I can't say and don't remember.
I mean, for me, yeah, a huge part of like my experience of Star Wars is I grew up on it really as a kid because I think we had some VHS copies we'd probably taped off the TV or for reruns, if I'm being honest. So I remember watching those with my dad. So really, a lot of it for me, I sort of wonder, are they actually good or is it just kind of nostalgia? And
it's a bit of both.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, a lot of it's warm and fuzzy feelings, and I can see why people can watch them now and go, what's the big deal if they've never seen them before? And it might just be an age thing because as you were like one when they came out, but yeah, a lot of guys who are a little bit older than you saw it as kids as well, so, and they're the guys making movies now and saying Star Wars is a huge influence on them. It's I guess it's become part of the pop culture fabric. Except now it's just kind of a series of catchphrases and iconic costumes in a lot of cases in people's minds.
But what I do think, I think that's interesting you say about the, you know, do we really remember them as, you know, how good were they at the time and all that sort of stuff. Mm. I think people are so precious. I mean, we've seen all the outrage about the changes.
Yeah.
And people are so precious about some of these things, but I wonder, like, how clearly they actually remember the original scenes, you know, if at all. Yeah. Like, Return of the Jedi, it's been... you know, about 28 years or something since it was released, and 14 of those were pre the special editions and 14 were after.
Yeah.
You know, everyone was complaining about this scene with Vader and the Emperor and the showdown, but you think, how well do you actually remember? I can't remember the last time I saw that original scene.
Oh, really? Okay. I think it might have been because it was repeated on TV.
You know, it's like the
TV,
hand but... shooting Greedo, you know, who shot first thing. You watch the original cut of that scene and it's not great. Like, it's pretty choppy.
The editing's awkward. I'm not a huge fan of the changing that because I think it takes away a bit of Han's redemption at the end. You know, he's sort of... You're not sure what to make of him at the beginning.
It was
he's still
clumsy in the special edition. Like, it was messy. The Blu-ray, watching it last night, they pretty much shoot at the same time, but the shot itself is about half a second, so it's so quick, you wouldn't even know. I mean, if you made a big rant about it, and then this was your sort of smoking bullet at the end, and you said, and here, watch the clip. Anyone who hadn't been following along would just be, I don't get it. Like, what's the big deal here?
I think it's just when you sort of see Harrison Ford's head jump about a foot to the left.
That doesn't happen anymore.
Oh, it doesn't happen. Oh, okay, yeah. Those were little awkward CG bits. And like, I don't hate all the changes that have happened. See, Empire Strikes Back, I actually like almost all of the changes, except maybe Boba Fett's new voice. And that's one of those things where, you know, where George always says, oh, I'd always planned to do this, but we didn't have the technology at the time. They did have Maoris, I think, in 1977. So clearly that's a case of him changing his mind later.
They didn't have the technology to bring them to put them in the snow.
Maybe.
Or,
I see.
In the desert.
Or in a recording studio for
in a
just
recording
the vocal.
Studio, yeah.
Maybe the Actors Guild was racist at that point and they wouldn't allow...
quite possibly.
Although James Earl Jones was there. That's... those Maori bounty hunters are probably way more terrifying than Dengar, the guy who's wrapped in bandages.
And he's wearing loafers. That's what I love about Dengar.
Oh, my. One of them's not even wearing shoes.
And you know he's wearing... his armor is stormtrooper armor.
Just
painted brown. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know how effective stormtrooper armor is. Well, I guess, yeah, back on the Star Wars topic, it's a lot of people, I guess, at the time of the 70s, it was obviously a huge deal and helped usher in the era of the, I guess, the blockbuster, especially the kind of, I don't want to say cheap because Star Wars isn't cheap, but the kind of unashamedly kind of fun and goofy summer movie. Whereas before, those films might have just been something, some schlock you went to see at the $2 drive-in, you know, Attack of the Piranhas. I sort of think of Star Wars as like the ultimate trajectory of that kind of fun cinema.
And
I can see where a lot of, you know, sort of key science fiction writers took issue with Star Wars because it kind of, it began, at least in film, like a gradual dumbing down of science fiction films. And you had a lot of terrible Star Wars ripoffs coming out straight after Star Wars as well. Harlan Ellison famously wrote a piece in 1977. Are you familiar with the writer, Harlan Ellison?
I'm familiar with the kind of controversy around him.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. Everyone seems to have a negative story about him, except me. I have a positive one, but I'll save that for another show. But he was very scathing of the film at the time. And he's kind of a bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a
curmudgeon.
Curmudgeon, contrarian. He likes to disagree with people because it's fun and then call them pinheads. But he sort of commented that, yeah, a lot of the characters are really shallow. Like, this was when the first film came out, and I totally see what he meant. They're kind of, they're archetypes, you know. They're meant to be kind of simple.
Oh, it's incredibly broad.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's appealing, I mean, obviously, to a mainstream audience. It's, I think of Star Wars as being, that's why I get frustrated, not like in a big way, but, you know, when people think, oh, Star Wars equals Star Trek. But Star Wars is so swashbuckling and sexy.
Star Wars is the adventure piece, really, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I won't say anything bad.
No,
about Star Trek,
I will.
I haven't seen enough of it. I'm certainly not anti-Star Trek. But there's just something really fun and I think especially as we talk about the Star Wars comics, that's what's missing for me with a lot of them. They just don't have that breeziness that the Star Wars original movies had.
No, you're absolutely right there. I think... It's probably not just the comics, it's the expanded universe as a whole, except maybe like the earliest kind of Star Wars comics, like I don't know if you've read any of the Marvel Star Wars comics, which they came out at around the early 80s to kind of the start of the 90s even. Actually,
I've read a couple of omnibuses. I don't recall a lot, so they obviously didn't have a huge impact on me. No. So I do remember Jackson.
Sorry? Jackson.
Do you remember? Yeah, he's the Green Rabbit.
Oh, he looks like the Trix rabbit or something.
He looks like Bucky O'Hare.
And he's like Han Solo, but a rabbit. There's lots of weird characters in those books.
Yeah, like if you ever wanted Han Solo to be a rabbit.
Yeah.
That's what you covered.
Well, that may be an obscure wish, but I guess somebody is very pleased out there. Maybe they're going for like a Howard the Duck thing. We know George Lucas is a huge fan of Howard the Duck.
Huge fan, loves Howard the Duck. He's got his head mounted on his wall above the fireplace, I imagine.
Has that film ever been released on DVD?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought he was ashamed of it. It has a nude duck scene.
I hope it gets the Blu-ray treatment. That's an amazing film. I won't get even started on Howard the Duck because I love Howard the Duck so much.
I've never read any of the comics. I think it'd be right up my alley. But
you should. The comics are really great. I know people say that, and of course, there's always that. They're never going to be as great as they were at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I love the black and white Ninja Turtle, Eastman and Laird, and I'll tell people. I used to tell people all the time, they're amazing, you've got to read them, they're fantastic. And they are from a certain point of view. I threw that in there. Just keep it Star Warsy. But yeah, if you just read them cold and you didn't have that nostalgic thing and you read them now in 2011, they're not that great.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I kind of love the old, the Marvel Star Wars comics from the 77 to 86, I've got it here, and they put out a lot of issues, and it was in newspaper, syndication, so kind of in the Modesty Blaze style where there's three panels at a time, so that might be why it didn't make much of an impact on you then. But that at the time... reading those now, they capture the vibe of the original films. They're a lot more adventurous, not so heavy in the drama department, and maybe that's because they draw more from the original Star Wars film and less from, like, the last chapters of Return of the Jedi, where it gets very dark and unpleasant.
I think whatever you say, like, about Lucas and his writing, that none of these other writers, be they comics or novels, have really been able to predict the kind of scope or direction he's willing to take Star Wars. Mm. And that can be jarring sometimes for the fans, like when he does stuff like in episode 2 and throws in a 50s diner scene.
Yeah.
But he's always, and you see it particularly with the Clone Wars animated show, he really will just go into some strange directions. And that's where I think his work's really interesting, because he's willing to push past and explore all sorts of things that the other writers only write within the context of what they've already seen.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, looking at these old comics, I can see that they draw from the films. There's like a tentacle monster. There's all these kind of things which they in the Flash Gordon comics of the time, and even the newer comics through Dark Horse, they seem more. They're picking bits and pieces off, I guess maybe the more successful expanded universe stuff, and it, I guess it's now's an appropriate time to get into the EU because there's a lot of it, and for a long while they weren't too fussed with how it tied into the films. Obviously, George Lucas had final say over what gets cut in, what gets changed. You know, Boba Fett's whole history that the expanded universe really, really loved and got into. You know, with this completely different background was, just completely changed for the films. And I know a lot of, a lot of fans of the expanded universe weren't too happy with the prequels for those reasons as well. But the expanded universe, it's, the vibe's almost wrong. They're going for like a science fiction novel thing where it's very based on technology and they're worrying about how ships get into orbit when really, in Star Wars, that does not matter because it's about these characters.
No, and if you hear Lucas, like, on little clips and things or just stories from when they're writing the Clone Wars, he'll find all sorts of solutions to make things happen. Like, if you want something to happen, it'll just happen. And I find the novels, the comics, for the most part, to be quite turgid. Like, you people complain about the prequels and the Senate scenes and all the talky-talk and everything. But I'm amazed at some of the decisions that are made in the expanded universe, just stuff that I think absolutely goes against the essence of these characters.
That's probably summed up perfectly in, I guess, the novels which kind of launched this whole fascination with the Star Wars EU, which was the Timothy Zahn Heir to the Empire saga. That was the name of the first book, but then it was a trilogy, basically, about set, I think, 5 years after Return of the Jedi, Han and Leia, I think, having their first babies, and their kids would later on have adventures and so forth. But they were like, the whole book was kind of about them setting up this government, and there was an attack from the outside by this Grand Admiral Thrawn and all that. But I could see rereading that in comics form, I did for this week's show, there's not a lot of kind of Star Wars-y stuff in there. Like, there's a few memorable kind of smugglery characters and so forth, but it's not. Yeah, they're more interested in the kind of the odd little political machinations, which work great in a novel, not great in a comic, and I'd never want to see it in a film.
What I don't understand. Like, I mean, I was excited when I heard those books were around because they came out at a time when you really weren't any options for Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I didn't make it through the first book. Right. But wouldn't you think that someone sitting down and going, okay, I'm going to write about Star Wars, I'm going to write about the Star Wars universe, I would at least go, okay, here's my first book. It's got to have at least three really different and inventive locations in it. You know, there's all those things that are in all the Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
You know, they rocket along at a certain pace, and it just astounds me that these writers aren't interested in that. And, you know... Yeah. Why marry off Han Solo, like, if you're going to do a future story? That just, he's not, like, Han Solo having kids and being married and going to Senate hearings and things and wearing a general jacket and stuff. It's just, that's not Han Solo.
Yeah, that's like a weird, awkward, and I guess that's a Harrison Ford thing because he always plays that character. It's as awkward as watching him play the president in that Air Force One movie. It's just not...
I would have... If I was doing, like, that sort of story, he would be... Oh, yeah, he loved her and everything, but it wouldn't have lasted. They were very different people. She was sucked into this whole, like, government thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he should have been, like, flying around in a ship with a girlfriend that was, like, half his age and was one of those girls with the big tendrils on her head.
Well, he's like James Bond, isn't he? He's good at seducing women, but I can't see him being good in a long-term relationship.
Yeah, or Batman or something, you know? Like, he should have not
his women
had that.
Die, so
he's been him and Chewie high-fiving and traveling around and smuggling like beer and stuff.
Is that what they smuggle?
Space beer.
I remember half the novels had the problem of all the opening chapters had to find some explanation for why Han wasn't at home with the kids. So they'd trump up some lame excuse that, oh, we're sending you on a diplomatic mission because this alien species insists that they meet the pilot of the, you know, like, it was always this kind of ham-fisted way to recreate that, you know, the dynamic of the, you know, the rogue who can't be anchored down, you know, the princess and the, Luke changed.
I just say he was drunk. That's why he wasn't at home with the kids. He was drunk. He was gambling with Lando.
Yeah, what's the equivalent of poker? Sabacc. There's lots of A's.
Sabacc, yeah. He's playing Sabacc with Lando.
I'm just having the strangest thing just came back to me from the Heir to the Heir to the Empire novels. The last chapter of that book has this awkward scene where one of them's drinking hot chocolate, and then they're like, "Oh, what are you drinking?" He's like, "Oh, it's this new drink from the spice mines of blah blah blah. It's hot chocolate."
Things that shouldn't be in Star Wars: hot chocolate and ducks, because they put ducks in the prequel in Phantom Menace.
Ducks. Where are the ducks?
They're in the water in Naboo.
Well, they had horses. They had statues of horses.
Mm.
And he's also named his ship after Falcon, which to him must be, maybe he had like someone predict the future and they told him there will be birds called Falcons.
That's a hard thing, isn't it, though, like with sci-fi, because I wouldn't want to be making up space names for things, because that always sounds kind of lame. Like you almost want to avoid it. Like, I'm pretty sure there are Star Wars days of the week. They have their own thing instead of Monday or whatever. But you just never hear it mentioned in the movie.
You'd
want to
hope so. That always happens when they try and describe what year something happened, because then they have to go, 5 years since the Battle of Endor. Like, these people don't have their own calendars, surely, because that's too confusing. Mm. But you already got your suspension of disbelief. They're talking English, for one. So, clearly you can put up with them. Well, like I remember in Empire Strikes Back, Han says, "I'll see you in hell." So clearly, they have a Christian mythology in Star Wars.
The Flintstones had a Christmas special.
Oh my, that just throws a spanner in the works. And on, like, there's all these other examples of the expanded universe, and a lot of them, they come before and after the prequels, and they absorb those in different ways, because once the continuities changed, it throws kind of these awkward twists and turns into these stories. But I think we should take a second to talk about the prequels, because I know I've got my opinion on them. Chris has his own, and I'm sure you've got your own. I'm curious what you thought of them, especially at the time and then now.
Mixed feelings.
Okay.
Like, I was pretty into them when they were released. Like, you would see each one in the movies, and I'd think, oh, you know, this is pretty good. But they... you know, the more that you watch them, obviously, the worse they get. Attack of the Clones is probably my least favorite. I think that's got some really terrible decisions and moments. But at the same time, I'm kind of glad we have them. And Star Wars for me is about an experience which is a lot bigger than just the stories that are in the movies.
Okay.
You know, I still like the mythology that he created. I like that we've got the battle droids and the clones and all those sorts of things, because I enjoy them. I really enjoy the Clone Wars series. That's gotten better and better as it goes. And I enjoy the video games and all that sort of stuff. And I also just enjoy being excited about Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't like a lot of this expanded universe stuff we're talking about, but I can see on my shelf here, I've still got action figures from the expanded universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just like that kind of... I like the idea of some things more than the actual thing. Does that make sense? But I mean...
It does.
It's just like you can like... A lot of people like Batman, but they like the idea of Batman. They're not going to sit down and read what I just read today with Batman's son.
Yeah.
But they'll go and play a game or watch a movie, or they'll go, yeah, I love Batman. But they might not have ever read a Batman comic.
I don't think... Yeah, I think you've got a point there. I mean... Star Wars especially, and Batman's the same thing, I guess. There is besides the story and issues you might have with the films as a package themselves, they are kind of a product of, well, a whole amount of work, especially visual design. I think, I know you're a fan of, say, toys and so forth, but it's because the looks of the characters are so iconic, and I guess Star Wars work best, and maybe the expanded universe stuff works best when it leaves you a little bit more room for those. Yeah, these are the stories I would have imagined as a kid. That's why I like the 70s Star Wars comics, because they're for kids, unlike the other expanded universe stuff, which is for the jaded 50-year-old Star Wars fan.
Yeah, exactly. And there's still enough in the prequels to keep me going. Like, there's enough sequences. There's at least a good couple of sequences in each movie where I've just got that big grin on my face and I'm a kid again. And you notice that with the Blu-rays, you start skipping through them. Like, I was just looking through. I didn't have time to consume at all. Mm-hmm. Just watching little bits and pieces. And There's so much. And there's a funny thing happening now. I mean, we're, what, 12 years out from Phantom Menace, which is a long time. And I'm starting to have that nostalgia about it as well, where you sort of look at something and go, oh, I remember that. That's kind of cool. Well, that's fun. Well, and you don't have that anger or disappointment attached to it anymore.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There's a lot of... Well, I'm not singling out Phantom Menace as crappy here, but I'm saying there's a lot of crappy films I remember I can watch now and go, these are really bad. But because you see them at that right time, they become a part of your growing up. And for me, Phantom Menace came out, I think, just when I was getting into year 8 or 9. So I was kind of just on the cusp of... Yeah, I was about the perfect age for that film. I think they were aiming it at, you know, 12-year-old boys, really. But that one, at the time, I remember liking it or being so amped about it that it didn't matter how good the film actually was, because it was this whole thing. There was the products, the toys, the Jar Jar Binks lollipop that you could suck on his tongue. and at the time, yeah, I remember my first glimpse of it was when I even heard that there was going to be a prequel. Was I had this Star Wars Behind the Magic interactive CD-ROM. Do you remember interactive CD-ROMs?
Yeah, I had the same thing. Yeah. Oh, my. And a lot of the deleted scenes that have just appeared on the Blu-ray are from that, from those discs.
I remember for years people were like, oh, there's this lost scene where Han's in the cantina and he's got a girlfriend there. I'm like, I saw that when I was in year 8.
Mm.
And it's a bad black and white thing and the audio is terrible.
Which is what it is on the Blu-rays.
Oh, well, there you go. I mean, and that was my first glimpse of the Phantom Menace, and that movie had the best trailer. It makes the film look freaking excellent, and it's got its fun bits, you know, the pod race and so forth. I might not care about any of the characters, but if you're just there for the spectacle, I think it mostly delivers. There's a few questionable decisions, I would say, and it's not a film I would like watching now, but...
I think audiences have changed, because a lot of that silly stuff is in the originals. I mean, even... And the Senate stuff. Some of Vader's first lines in New Hope is saying... They're having this conversation about the Senate and talking all sorts of, like, garbage about it.
I guess it's just one scene.
I read the Star Wars manga of New Hope.
Okay.
And it's amazing because when you actually just see the dialogue written like that, and it is the actual New Hope dialogue, you think, you know, it could come straight from the prequels. It's all gobbledygook. Yeah. And it makes you think, well, if I was only just reading this and never seen the film, what would I make of it? Like, would it be something that compelled me? So I grew out of Star Wars, watched it as a kid, loved it, grew out of it. In 97, when they came back to the cinema, I had that kind of, oh, yeah, I remember Star Wars. That was kind of cool. I'll go and see this. And I laughed all the way through them. They were hilarious. I laughed at bad acting and bad dialogue and all these things and had a great time and loved Star Wars again. But we don't laugh about things like that anymore. Now everybody gets angry and feels affronted, and I don't know why they get affronted. Like, I don't know why people can't watch Phantom Menace and have a laugh and, like, enjoy it and go along with the action bits and be excited about things. But instead we nitpick and we get upset about some of the strangest things, which I don't think really are why a movie is good or bad. Crystal Skull, the Indiana Jones, that always comes back to me with that, because people always say, oh, it had a CGI monkey in it. But a CGI monkey doesn't make a movie bad. I mean, we've just had Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Everyone loved that.
I agree.
There are a lot of reasons why that movie falls apart, but I think people have trouble articulating why that is, and people just get angry. I don't get that.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and I agree. Yeah, individual parts don't make up a whole film, and I guess a lot of people don't think too deeply about a film they've just watched, so they aren't always able to articulate why they didn't like a film. And for me, Crystal Skull, I don't dislike it because of the CGI monkeys. I dislike it because it kind of takes for granted that you're already invested in Indiana Jones. And for him, he's not even at all fazed by anything that's happening to him. So,
well, that's the answer, isn't it? Like, for me, the reason it falls apart is that whole last third or quarter or whatever takes the Indiana Jones out of the film, basically. And he just walks along and sees things, but he's not an active participant.
And he doesn't even seem particularly fazed. He's, like, seen it all before. And it's almost like, well, if he feels that way, why should I feel like he's in peril. He doesn't feel like he's actually in any danger. He never looks worried like, oh, my God, I could have died.
And that's what happens in the prequels as well, isn't it? I mean, there's not a lot of emotion or investment or engagement from a lot of the cast. I was just watching. They've replaced the goofy puppet Yoda from episode one with the CGI version.
Yeah.
And watching his performance, it's amazing. Like, you, with the Blu-ray HD, you're seeing all these little subtleties in the performances that you just don't see normally. And Samuel L. Jackson looks so bored. He couldn't be more disinterested if he tried. Yoda's acting circles around him.
Yeah, he kind of felt like stunt casting to me. It's like saying, oh, we've got this... It's like in a comedy where they'll cast, Anthony Hopkins, and then that's the joke. It's the other way.
He hadn't done a huge amount. Like, I remember actually being excited as someone who liked a lot of smaller films and cult films. I actually thought he was doing something kind of bold because I only knew Samuel L. Jackson from Pulp Fiction. I knew Ewan McGregor from Trainspotting.
Mm-hmm.
I knew Natalie Portman from The Professional.
Oh, my.
And I'm thinking, wow. Like,
and you knew Jack Lloyd from Jingle All the Way?
Yeah, from Jingle All the Way. Fantastic film.
Best film of his other...
Anything with Schwarzenegger in it, I'm there.
Yes.
None of them ended up doing anything.
Yeah, that's something that I'm a fan of the Red Letter Media reviews of these films, not because of the silly... I like the humor and stuff, but it's the points they raise, which are like, who is the main character of this film? There isn't like a Luke where you can go, yep, that's me. I'm that guy. And this is how I'd be reacting.
They are insightful reviews. That is someone getting to the core of what it is. Mm-hmm. He's not just saying, Jar Jar sucks. Jar Jar's an idiot. He's looking at, how are they structured? What are we following? What are we doing? Why do they fall apart? Mm-hmm. I get frustrated like that with Attack of the Clones. There's so many missed opportunities there.
That film feels like a lot of different things pulling in different directions. And he's got these set pieces. Okay, he knows he wants this, like this Ben-Hur-ish, not Ben-Hur, more like a Spartacus kind of arena gladiatorial battle. He's going for that epic thing. And then he wants, like a stormy weather. Like, he's got his scenes, but then it's the links between them that don't work. And that's what you were talking about. Like, he just like, okay, then they get in the ship and they go there. I guess maybe, I don't know if that it seems like a script thing. Like if he got someone to massage those kinks, in the thing and he still had final say saying, look, I know what's people are going to enjoy watching, like the, on the screen, you make this scene work where they're having their romance scene on Naboo. Whereas the romance scenes in Empire Strikes Back, I really love those scenes, like on the ship with Han and Leia. Kind of
I do too. I mean, there's great chemistry there, but it's not a realistic adult romance. I mean, they talk to each other like, they bicker like children.
But
you've
got
all those
thing,
same problems with, I mean, how long does it take to train Luke on Dagobah compared to how long it takes Han and Leia to be in this asteroid thing? What's the cluster of asteroids called?
I like cluster of asteroids. Field. A field of asteroids.
An asteroid field.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. No, that's a good point. I guess at one point they got desperate and ate Chewbacca's hair. Like, did they bring enough food for this?
Yeah, but we were kids. We didn't care. It was just they're inside this big slug. You're getting trained by a Muppet. This is awesome.
I guess the Han and Leia thing, I'm just thinking of that. That's like... And because those films are escapism, that's a perfect translation of what a kind of like a Mills and Boone's romance scene is like, because the man's always quite aggressive. That's Irvin Kershner, I'm guessing, was more a lot of his input massaging that in that direction of that film. But he knew this was pulpy, so I'm going to have a pulpy romance scene, and it works on that level. Whereas the Anakin and Padme scenes, I guess they were going for the pulpy thing as well. You've got the ridiculous sweeping music.
It's just so creepy, though.
Yeah, it's that leer. Like, he's like, oh, I'm going to F you.
There's more Han and Leia stuff in the deleted scenes, actually, on the Blu-rays, which is pretty good. Yeah. When he kisses her, she says, okay, hot shot, and then starts kissing him back even harder, which I wasn't expecting. And then he gets cock-blocked by C-3PO again.
That totally changes the vibe of that scene. That's interesting.
Yeah. And then there's another scene earlier on when Luke's in the medical bay and he starts to tell her that he's got feelings for her, and they start to kiss, or they're just about to, their lips are about to touch, and of course C-3PO comes in and cock blocks Luke as well, which is great. I love that. That's like probably what the C stands for in his name. It's not just protocol.
Pissing all over your romantic moment.
Yeah.
It is true that C-3PO and R2 are kind of the anchors of those films. Like, for me, they're almost like the most human characters. They're the ones who aren't doing... Well, R2's doing more heroic stuff, but they're the guys who are like, oh my God, let's just not get involved. C-3PO's like answer to everything, like, let's not deliver the plans to Obi-Wan Kenobi. Don't be silly, R2. We have a moisture farm to...
They're great in the first one. Some of that dialogue's hilarious. And he just loathes R2-D2.
It's so beautiful to watch. It's like a Laurel and Hardy thing, you know? They're like, they're chums, but they've hung out so long that they can't stand each other. And a comic which capitalizes on that. There was a droids comic in like the mid-90s, again from Marvel. This was kind of just after they were wrapping up their regular Star Wars run. I think it kind of tied into the cartoon, but not really. But those are some of probably the best Star Wars comics out there in terms of that kind of fun vibe, because they're aimed at kids. None of the other characters in there except R2 and C-3PO, which kind of forces them to be a bit inventive to how they make these stories work. And the fun part is they have all these adventures and then their memories are erased, and it's this nice little poetic moment. But, you know, the typical things, like there's a C-3PO is mistaken for an assassin droid who looks just like him.
He's got the X on him, hasn't he? He's like C-3PO and he's got an X.
C-3PO Extreme.
I have read those.
There's a 3-issue mini by John Romita, who's... well known for his run on Spider-Man, and he retold the original trilogy just from the point of view of the droids and adding all these little extra fun scenes. And it's great because that kind of sums up the vibe of all this stuff's happening around them. They aren't quite sure why or what. They're just getting dragged along. And that's kind of, I guess it's one of the few ones that's for kids. And all the other EU expanded universe stuff is, I guess, aimed at the jaded adults. Maybe that's why it doesn't capture the kind of fun vibe of them.
I did try to read a recent one. It's, I don't know, you might know what it's called. It had Qui-Gon in it.
Qui-Gon in it. Is it him with another apprentice? Like a different Padawan?
Yeah, I think so. And it was just weird. Like, nothing happened. They didn't go to any sort of interesting location. It was a lot of humans in it and just really bogged down and kind of serious. And just had no interest for me whatsoever.
That's kind of the problem. I mean, there's a lot of them. I think I've read the one in question, and it was just a lot of humming and haring over, should I be a Jedi? Shouldn't I be a Jedi? Is this right? Is this wrong? Like, stuff which, you know, in the original Star Wars, they didn't have to question, you know, should we be joining the separatist movement? Do they have a right to rebel? No, it was like the evil empire, and you attack them with your spaceships. It's like,
have you seen any of the Clone Wars?
I've only seen a couple of episodes. I'm a huge fan of the original Clone Wars, the two seasons by Genndy Tartakovsky. I love those. Those kind of made me kind of come around on the prequels a little bit, because I'm like, okay, this world could be interesting, and Mace Windu was actually useful and kind of a fun character in that series.
Well, I like Anakin in the Clone Wars. I mean, I've never liked that character, but he's my favorite part in the new series, because he just has so much to do and he has actual, you know, he's not a whiny character. He's strong. He kicks ass. He does lots of crazy things.
He's what I imagined Luke Skywalker's dad would have been like before turning to the dark side, which is, you know, he's a hero. He's a general.
He does some pretty dark things sometimes, but not in a necessarily always in a dark way. There's a little moment he has, which is always one of my favorites, where Obi-Wan's kind of with this woman and they've got this terrorist on a ship trapped and he's going to blow everything up. And this woman that Obi-Wan likes is a pacifist. Obi-Wan doesn't want to kill this guy in cold blood. And the guy's like, well, I'm going to blow up the ship. You're both screwed because neither of you are willing to act. And Obi-Wan's all, And he goes, come on, who's going to be the one to reveal themselves as a cold-blooded killer? And then Anakin's lightsaber just rips through his chest and he collapses and Obi-Wan's like,
Anakin.
And he's like, what? He's going to blow up the ship. And he just has that kind of attitude to it all the time of just, you know, he does what he has to do to get things done. He's very pragmatic, and I like that. I think that's a good start for the Vader character.
You could see how he gets down. That's like a slippery slope for him, rather than just him being, Obi-Wan never listens, it's all
it's
his
not
fault.
Fair.
Can't I be on the Jedi Council? I've been a Padawan for 3 years. He's kind of like Wesley Crusher in Star Trek The Next Generation. He's like, I want to be a Starfleet officer.
If Obi-Wan saw me doing this, he'd be very grumpy.
Oh, my God. I've forgotten that scene. That's horrifying.
You don't want to deal with a grumpy Obi-Wan.
Oh, no. Ooh, naughty Anakin. I can't imagine he's scolding. Think before you act. Oh, I've been ripped into by Obi-Wan.
Didn't face many consequences, did he? I mean, apart from getting his limbs chopped off and burnt alive. But up until that point, they gave him a pretty free run.
Yeah, you've learned a valuable lesson, Anakin. That's the best I can do. Thinking of the prequels, I got to think, I know a lot of people like Revenge of the Sith more. I think maybe if I was going to pop any of them in, I'd probably most likely want to watch Phantom Menace. It seems to be the one which, despite all its problems, it's pure. I can follow the characters and why they're doing things, and they're doing things for what they think are consistent, internally consistent reasons. You know, it's not robots fighting robots with no consequences, which is one thing that always bugged me about the end of Attack of the Clones, is that I'm watching these emotionless clone stormtroopers, or near emotionless, whatever, fighting these droids, and it's exploding everything, but nobody, like the Jedi certainly don't care if a clone trooper dies. They're just like, you know, they're expendable. Expendable robots fighting expendable clones of Temuera Morrison.
You know what comics I like the best? The Star Wars Tales.
Oh, yes. Those are good ones.
Because they're like just all short stories by different artists. And they did those ones which were all the indie artists doing stuff, like Tony Millionaire writing about
that is so
Jar Jar Binks' childhood. And
that one in particular is easily the one I can point to and go, yes, that is the moment where I'm like, oh, I kind of like Jar Jar in this comic. I don't like him. I love to hate him. But he's like at a good love to hate him level. It's about his dad and he's like hunting this white whale in this Moby Dick thing. And he's like, Jar Jar, take the wheel. And Jar's like, oh, Misha, take the wheel. Woo, woo, woo. And you fool, you'll crash us. And then, you know, Jar Jar causes they're stranded on a desert island, I think.
I love Tony Millionaire's contempt for his assignment. He's like, I like drawing big ships, so I'm going to draw a seafaring ship scene.
And he hates Jar Jar as much as... that particular issue had a lot of... Peter Baggy, I think, was in that one.
I can't imagine Tony Millionaire even watching Star Wars. He'd be like, what's a Star Wars?
It looked like he watched a couple of scenes of Jar Jar. He was like, okay, I have to write his parents. His dad has like his head in his hands while Jar Jar's going, oh, Misa, pick up a shell, wooby, wooby. And he's like, oh, just stop, make it stop. And that's like the perfect, that's the kind of Jar Jar story I want to read. And Peter Baggy did a fun Jar Jar story in that same issue, I seem
to. I'm trying to remember that one. It's been a while since I've read that issue, but it was pretty great.
Jar Jar, yeah, it's when he's a senator. So it's kind of like a series of ridiculous misunderstandings. Like, oh, Jar Jar, you're going to meet the very sensitive senator from this planet.
Oh, yes.
Who'll be extremely offended. So please, please be on your best behavior. He's like, meesy woosy. And then he does something ridiculous. And then they're all scolding him. And then they go, oh, how can we stay mad at you, Jar Jar? And then they all have a good laugh in the last panel. That's kind of a perfect Star Wars tale.
I will say, though, the Star Wars tales are so hit and miss. Like, it's very uneven. Like, there's a story about Yaddle, which is the young girl Yoda in the wig.
Sexy Yoda.
Yeah, sexy young lady Yoda.
Yeah, she's like the female Bugs Bunny. She's a Lola Bunny of Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about this Yaddle story.
Yaddle? I don't know. I can't remember. I think she died. I think she fell in. She was in a pit or something. I got no time for Yaddle because it's such a wasted up. You know, Yoda should be there. We don't know his species. They've never revealed what his species is. So that's fine if he's the only one. But when you've got two of them sitting up in that room, you sort of think, come on, one of you.
Have they had a species? That makes me wonder, have they, if they were the only two of their species on the Jedi, I'm guessing in the whole Jedi Temple, surely they would have had a couple of, like, awkward workplace romances or something.
A tryst. A fling.
You would go, you are the only thing of my species here, and that makes you incredibly attractive. Didn't she have, like,
a... She'd be the only thing he could reach.
True that. Or he could reach someone's genitals.
True. Yes. Okay.
There you go.
Maybe that guy with the big snake tail, are you sitting there?
Didn't she have, like, a stylish little, like, hairdo?
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of buy it. I just don't understand Yaddle. She's the most confusing thing in Star Wars for me, pretty much.
That's the most confusing thing for you?
Yaddle, yeah, because it doesn't make any sense.
I'm more confused by why they started with Darth Vader as, like, a seven-year-old instead of, like, a, you know, at the... Well, basically, the Clone Wars age was pretty perfect, I thought. Just started
there.
Yeah,
that would have been something.
I've got a quote... Sorry. I've got a quote here from a... Blah, 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 blah. I've got a quote here from a... no longer a young Jake Lloyd, but he still turns up to cons, as you probably are aware.
I met Jake Lloyd.
He seems nice, I would say. Like, people say, oh, he's
very
all...
Very
like,
shy.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I got from this interview. And normally, he's like, if people ask him dumb Star Wars questions, he'll react with, like, I don't care... Whatever. But this interview, they kind of asked him what his opinions are of The Phantom Menace. So I'll just play that now.
Mm. Here we go. I enjoyed it when I saw it when I was younger, and that's what it's for. It's for children. It's for young adults. It's also for the fans who can kind of let themselves enjoy it. Because when you have something like that, there's a lot of expectations for it to be... for it to meet the standards of an older public. And I don't think George did that. And... I've noticed there's every time I come to one of these, there's always people who bring their smaller children, their 9, 10-year-olds, who just absolutely love the film. And that's who it's for. So that's kind of where I understand my enjoyment. For me to go back and watch it now, I just think would be a little creepy.
Steve, this is creepy. We met him, and he's very shy, and I didn't know what to say to him.
Yeah.
So I go... Man, I've got a lot of action figures of you.
He would have loved that.
Yeah, and he goes, right. And I go, I didn't even intend to. It's like, I don't remember, like, why I need all these child Anakins. It's like they're just multiplying on my shelves. I must have about 13 of them. And he's like, right. And I said, that must sound really creepy, huh? And he was like, yeah.
I play with them all the time.
Yeah, I've got one in my pocket.
When you said child Anakin, I thought you said charred Anakins, which also makes sense.
Well, they did make a figure of that as well.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Now you can
his arms and legs and stuff detach.
Oh, my God. You can relive the most devastating moment from the Star Wars trilogy.
Oh, they make figures of everything. Even, like, you know, talking of expanded universe, what's Cade Skywalker's deal?
Oh my, this is the Star Wars Legacy comics, I believe.
He looks like Bon Jovi.
Yeah, he's kind of, he's like...
He's got a black trench coat and a shotgun.
Oh, if you want someone to be cool stubble. In a comic, trench coat, yes, trench coated up. I guess they were going for like a... He looks a bit like... He reminds me of Gambit, maybe in the attitude and the trench coat. But yeah, he's... it's Legacy, Star Wars Legacy sort of set, I think, maybe 100 years after... the original Star Wars trilogy. So it's like a descendant of Luke is now like basically a Han Solo-esque character. He's a rogue and then he realizes his Jedi destiny. And there's like a whole plot around that. But
so I don't think a descendant of Luke's would be a dork. I was watching his message to Jabba via hologram where he's wearing the like hair that makes it look like he's wearing a furry stack hat. And his performance there is just so terrible. And the Blu-rays, you just see everything. Even like Carrie Fisher in the Slave Leia costumes got all these sort of lines on her face and she looks stoned. All these things that I never noticed before.
Has it enriched your Star Wars experience?
It's weird. Like you can see Mark Hamill's acne.
Ah. I guess you could see, especially post Empire Strikes Back, that's when he had... He got injured in a motorcycle accident, didn't he?
He looks rough at the very beginning before the Wampa hits him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Oh, before, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, before. Like, you see a couple of seconds of his face before the Wampa hits him, and he already looks messed up.
I'm assuming you've seen the holiday special where he's coated in layers and layers of makeup to hide
it. Yeah, yeah, he looks like a China doll.
Beautiful. Just that moment in the Empire Strikes Back, just before he gets hit by the Wampa, have you ever read any of the Star Wars Infinities comics?
Yeah, little bits and pieces. What happens is when I get these expanded universe figures, they often come in two packs with a comic attached.
Ah, okay.
And so I've not read full series, but I get little bits and pieces.
Mm.
And they have done quite a few figures based on Infinities. Like, I've got the Darth Maul with the cybernetic legs.
Oh, my. Cool. Spider legs.
Yeah.
Because I've read the original trilogy ones, and just to fill people in, they're kind of like a... like when Marvel did their What If stories, which, or DC Elseworlds, where they take the story and then they tweak some minor detail, and then the Star Wars story kind of unfurls in this different way. So the New Hope one begins with the run on the trench run on the Death Star, except Luke's missiles malfunction. So then they have to scramble. Oh, and it's not his fault, but they basically they have to scramble and start a new rebellion, and Leia's captured by the Imperials, and she's kind of basically takes on the role that the Emperor and Darth Vader had envisioned for Luke. The Empire Strikes Back one begins with when Luke gets hit by the Wampa, he dies, and then Han and Leia end up going to Dagobah, and of course Yoda trains. Like, Luke convinces Han that he's the chosen Jedi, just so Han will be convinced to go to Dagobah, otherwise he wouldn't go. Little things like that. So when Han turns up and meets Yoda, he's like, I thought I was the Jedi Master. What's happening?
Yoda slaps him.
Yoda, not ready. That was terrible. Yeah, have you read any of the... and like, they're kind of like the Star Wars tales. Have you read any of the Star Wars Empire and Star Wars Rebellion comics? They kind of take place during the years between New Hope and Empire Strikes Back.
New Hope and Empire? No, I'm not sure.
Yeah, those ones kind of... Empire had did a whole bunch of short stories, and that one is... That's actually a really good Star Wars kind of title to pick up. It's now defunct, and they had a lot of good artists on that one. But
that's the era to explore.
I think so.
I think. I mean, that's the time. You can't do between Empire and Jedi because you don't have Han.
That's true, yeah. Yeah,
well, Star Wars Empire, that's a pretty good time. I'd love to see them do an animated series like The Clone Wars, but set in that period. I think that would be great.
Oh, man, yeah. They've released, I'm sure you've seen the figures of, like, the original trilogy done in the Clone Wars style, and, like, it just looks great.
Yeah, there's the little maquettes and stuff. Yeah, I've got the Princess Leia.
There's a life-size version of that.
Yeah, I've seen that. When we saw Carrie Fisher when she was here and did her one-woman show, and they actually had the life-size one of those descend down from the ceiling.
She must be so sick of that by now.
She was pretty horrified by it, actually. She said it was a sex doll.
Oh, my. She was saying in an interview that she never finds out about the merchandising. It's not like they send them, like, a form saying, oh, we're going to put out these mugs. Just thought you'd like to know. She never finds out, so she finds out years later that there's a Princess Leia cookie jar shaped like her head and stuff. And, like, I think they gave it to her on the Oprah Winfrey show, and she was, yeah, as same reaction as you just described, kind of horrified, like, oh.
Well, you know, she had a famous upset at one of the conventions because the gentle giant who manufactures statues had done a big slave Leia statue, and... a lot of her bum was exposed, a lot more than, you know, you could see up her skirt, and they'd sculpted it all.
Oh,
and she got really quite upset about that, and made them take it off display. I think it was a prototype or whatever, and then they had to actually manufacture it with that covered. And then as a joke, they George organized, I think it was George, they got a topless version of the statue made, which she's got.
Yeah, I'm sure she's happy about that. You see a lot of her butt in that movie.
She's got underboob in that movie, which I had no idea until I watched the Blu-rays. So there you go. There's a selling point.
Is Princess Leia attractive?
I think so. Yes, I'm a fan. But my favorite Princess Leia is the Hoth Leia when she's wearing the little snowsuit.
Oh, it's adorable. It's adorable.
Yeah, she's smoking in those scenes.
I kind of like her her Cloud City outfit, you know, the hoops of the hair, you know. It's more kind of like an evening wear for a casual dinner with Darth Vader. But
the worst is when she's wearing the Ewok dress. Because I think that Ewok dress is made out of human leather.
Ah, see, the skinned victims of of the terrible cannibal tribe of the Ewoks. And because you mentioned Behind the Magic Star Wars Interactive CD-ROM, do you remember the... there's this little feature on that, which is like a Princess Leia catwalk show, and it was like in 1998 CG rendered, and there's like a Princess Leia in a saucy Hoth undergarment. And it's incredible. But yeah, you see all the different outfits. The Bosk one is very unattractive, but they zoom in on her butt anyway in that.
There's a lot of those things from Behind the Magic that are on the Blu-ray. Like there's a clip somewhere on there of Admiral Ackbar singing about how ugly he is, which is in a documentary I watched last night. And the classic documentaries are just fantastic.
Mm.
This one was about the creatures of Return of the Jedi, and it was hosted by Carrie Fisher, who had massive shoulder pads, and Lando, who just looked
also had massive
really
shoulder pads.
Sleazy and happy to see you.
He's
he was just like, oh, wow, hello, I'm Lando Calrissian, I'm Billy Dee, and I've slept with all these creatures.
Well, aren't you the sexiest thing
I slept with a Gamorrean god.
He's kind of the Captain Kirk of... so, yeah, I remember not really knowing what to make of him as a kid. I just thought he was basically hand, but like a Mortal Kombat color switch mode, you know. So,
Shadow hand.
Yeah, but now, like, he's one of my favorite characters to watch in Empire Strikes Back. Like, I just enjoy watching this sleazeball hit on Leia and Han getting all, like, going, okay, stop hitting on her now. Like, finally, you meet someone who's more of a scoundrel and more of a rogue than Han. I've got a Lando Calrissian action figure. It's the only Star Wars action figure that I own.
They've got quite good banter in Jedi, too. I was watching the Sarlacc pit scenes last night, and where he's going, I thought you were blind! And when Han's trying to shoot the tentacle.
Can he see or not? Is he just going to shoot Lando?
Yeah, he's just shooting wild.
Revenge, motherfucker.
Lando's hair's very wild in that scene as well.
It's a tense moment, and the hot sun on Tatooine. Two suns.
Two suns.
That does a lot to a black man's hair.
Yeah, it's very frizzy.
We are not racist here on the Exosuit.
No, God, no. Lando, love him.
I was going to... Yeah, I got completely derailed again with the Empire comics, and I want to recommend this miniseries to people. It's I think it's the second volume of the Star Wars Empire, so it's all been collected. It follows what Biggs was doing during A New Hope.
I always wondered what Biggs was doing.
Didn't we all? Because he just he meets up with him. He's like, hey, what have you been doing with yourself, man? He's like, no time to talk. I'll talk to you after the battle. And that did not work out too well for Biggs.
No.
So this, I guess he wrote this in a letter and put it on Luke's desk in case I don't return. This is what happened to me while you were doing stuff on the Death Star.
Does it turn out he was just combing his moustache for a couple of months?
God, I look incredible. Him and Lando have a moustache club.
He was just staring in the mirror like Marky Mark at the end of Boogie Nights, psyching himself up for the battle.
Incredible. He was it's his adventures in the academy and defecting to the Rebel Alliance, so there's it's fun to see they get the kind of military vibe of, and I forget how militaristic the first Star Wars movie is, because you see a lot of the Empire doing their military stuff in their outfits. As you mentioned, there's a boardroom meeting with all the generals, and Biggs is kind of in that and then defects, and like Porkins gets a role here.
Oh, I love Porkins. See, I would read a like miniseries about Porkins for sure.
The funniest thing they do is they kind of suggest that underneath all the fat, he's actually really, really muscly. You just couldn't tell from that cockpit view. So outside of the spaceship, he's this huge, muscly guy.
Still, I'm surprised they got him outside of the spaceship.
Need a crane to lift him in.
well, look, they've got this section on the Blu-ray in the deleted scenes, which is Forgotten Pilots. And it's actors sitting in cockpits getting fed lines, and they're repeating the lines.
There are too many of them, that guy.
But one of them is a grandma.
Really?
It's like an old lady. I'm not making this up. Is sitting there in the cockpit, and they're saying stuff like, something forward batteries. And she's like, forward bat bananas, and she's just getting everything wrong and stumbling all over it and looks absolutely confused, like she thought she was getting a hair done or something when they, you know, put the helmet on her. It's just crazy.
Ion pod malfunction.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
It would have been a very different, I don't know. I can't imagine them making an action figure of that one, but you never know.
Well, you know, they did have Senator Palpatine having a lightsaber fight with just about everyone in Revenge of the Sith. So clearly the elderly, Star Wars is like kind of a love letter to the elderly in the same vein as Cocoon or something like that, which kind of says, you know, hey, you're not useless. You can rule the galaxy.
And it's written by an old man. I mean, that's what people forget. We complain, but we're young and sprightly. I mean, George Lucas is old. He's like my grandfather's age. If my grandfather wrote six sci-fi science fiction movies, they would be terrible, I guarantee it. And he's a funny guy, but they would be like, you know, Revenge of My Slippers or something. It would just be crazy. So you got to give him some credit.
See, I'm sure your granddad has far more interesting stories than that. You've just never asked.
True.
Yeah. This is in case Grandad's listening and he can then tell you, see, that lad and lad's way nicer grandson than you will ever be. As for other Star Wars comics, I mean, there's a whole stack of them. The other one that people usually bring up is Dark Empire. And this one, it was one of the early ones around the same time as Heir to the Empire when they hadn't quite worked out the continuity. So Coruscant isn't like a big cityscape. It's just called Imperial Planet. And the Emperor...
It's full of haystacks.
What? Oh, I see.
Oh, it could be. I don't know. You're saying it's not a big city. I'm just trying to think, well, I'm lowering my expectations.
No, in true Star Wars fashion, planets have only one thing on them. So yeah. It's either a desert planet or a city planet. I guess Naboo's like...
a haystack planet.
Haystack planet. Dantooine. Dantooine's the haystack planet, according to the...
I should have taken Padme.
A lot of windmills on Dantooine, I hear.
For a role in the haystack planet.
Oh, man. The Dark Empire is a weird comic. I'm just flicking through it now. I love the art. It's got kind of like a Howard Chaykin look. That's comic
is
fan.
Is that the Clone Emperor one?
Yes, that's the one. And Luke, this is sort of set in that, again, that awkward period once Han and Leia are together. It's like, oh, can we still go adventuring? We have a government to run. But,
we've got to go buy groceries.
Children to take care of. They don't have kids yet. But it's implied that this... you'll see how this is an early stage of the expanded universe. It's implied that the Emperor has put his seed inside Leia and she will give birth
really?
To the Anti-Emperor, Antichrist, I don't know. Yeah. Oh, it's implied. There's a volume
two of
this.
Did they have a moment?
No, I think he does it with the Force, if you know
right.
what I mean.
No, sort of no. like that... guy through the bars in Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, yeah, just throwing it at a good aim, force push, or to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Luke turns to evil, and you can tell because he suddenly has a lot more, like, lines on his face. I guess the same thing happened to the Emperor, so that's something that stayed in continuity. And at the end, it turns out it's all a big scheme.
It's all a dream.
It was all a dream. No.
He could eat bad clams and had a fever dream.
Possibly. I guess the same thing happens to the Emperor that when he got Darth Vader on his side, Darth eventually changed his mind and turned on him. Luke does the same thing. The Emperor has a really bad instinct for choosing his apprentices. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. For a guy that's that smart and plans everything ahead, you'd think he'd figure that part out.
I mean, even... Christopher Lee, I can't even remember. Count Dooku.
Dooku, yeah.
I honestly couldn't remember it, I'm sorry. He's not much of an apprentice, really. I mean, I don't know, he's off doing his own thing.
It's more like a golf buddy.
Yeah, you could see them getting together on the Coruscant like
you know, like range. In episode 2 when he's flying off, he's escaping at the end and he's on that little speeder. I always think that they should add some golf clubs on the back.
And have him, like, go off at 14 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You'll never catch me alive. Oh, I wish he'd yelled that. That would have made that scene. I would have loved Attack of the Clones far more if they'd have just gone full Snidely Whiplash with Count Dooku and had him twirl a mustache. I guess that's Grievous's thing. Yeah, he's more of the... Wah-wah-wah. He had a Jamaican accent, didn't he? Wow. George Lucas just hates everyone who's not white,
yeah,
Anglo-American.
Yeah.
He doesn't like the English.
Hates
either.
People. forgotten how to love.
Except money. He loves money. I think he genuinely likes the films he's making.
I think he loves film. I mean, he's a pioneer. He's a pioneer. I love him. Like, I think he's... And he donates a lot of stuff to young filmmakers, all sorts of things.
Mm. I just wish he'd just make an original film again. I want to see if he can make Lightning Strike twice, you know?
Yeah, I think that'd be interesting. I'd like to see that.
Yeah. But I think we should leave it off here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man, I can't believe we talked that long about Star Wars. That's incredible. And even without Chris, and hopefully if Chris is listening now, he's had a bit of a chuckle, and Chris will be back next week.
Thank you anyway. Shame you weren't here, and I hope that all clears up for you. drink a lot of water, eat a lot of toast.
So, Luke, where can more people find your podcasting work?
Just go to my site. My site's lukemiltonwrites.com, and you'll find links to the C-List podcast, to the Book Was Better podcast, and also my pop culture site that I contribute to, which is called Fruitless Pursuits.
Fantastic.
And my comic, Glorious Bounty.
You know, I haven't read that yet. Tell me more about that.
It's a comic. We're actually on our third book, so there's quite a lot of stuff out there. It's a webcomic. It's Star Wars inspired, actually. So it's interesting I mention it here. Edward Grugg. Draws the book, and I write it and color it. It's at gloriousbounty.com. The first book was called The Sexy Virus. The second book's The Sticky Goat Affair. And now we're doing The Convoluted Killbots. And it's basically about four bounty hunters. It's a sci-fi book. Four bounty hunters that don't really get along, don't really like each other. It's very tongue-in-cheek, silly book. And they're very inept. And, about their kind of adventures. And not so much a action-adventure book as a almost like a sitcom, I guess, about how they interact and get along with each other and sell each other out and do all sorts of horrible things.
We need to get you on a Forlom and Zuckuss Star Wars Bounty Hunter miniseries somehow.
Well, that's what inspired me, because when they were talking about the live-action Star Wars show, which hasn't happened yet, they said it was going to be about bounty hunters, and I was thinking, God, you know, what would I do? And it just kept getting sillier and sillier the more I thought about it. So, you know, we've got a character that's a robot, we've got a man of mystery, we've got an alien, and we've got a complete douchebag, which was inspired by Dengar.
You got to have us on your C-List podcast sometime.
We'll do that very, very soon. So we'll definitely, but it'll be great. If you thought we derailed a lot on this show, C-List, it's just the wilds in there. We don't know what we're doing. It'll be crazy.
I was going to lead out on a song that's from the holiday special starring all the original cast and Bea Arthur.
Love it.
Yeah, fantastic. The extended Cirque du Soleil sequence is a keeper. But
Wookiee porn.
Oh, my God, it's all coming back. So I'll be leading out with Carrie Fisher singing over the theme from Star Wars. And it's in celebration of Wookiee Life Day. You can catch previous episodes of the Extra Sequential podcast at extrasequential.com. You can befriend us on Facebook. And you can send your hate mail to Chris at extrasequential.com because he's not present and can't stop me. Thanks for being on the show, Luke.
Thank you very much for having me. It was great.
If only there was an appropriate Star Wars thing to say at the end of something.
I have a bad feeling about this.
That's for the beginning of the show. maybe we could just do a Chewbacca roar.
Now that's what I call pod racing.
Yippee!
Wizard Annie.
So many memories. Thanks everyone for listening, and you'll hear me and Chris next week. See you, Luke.
See ya.